welcome to Kayak Fishing the Wild West. On your one stop for kayak fishing information, coast to coast, that's on kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, joined by Northwest kayak fishing expert and co-host Isaac the Nothing Miller at the helm in Portland, Oregon. I'm sitting at my desk outside of Bodega Bay, California, on the North Coast. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm doing well.
Nice to hear your voice.
That's kind of nice.
This week, like every week, we'll have an expert panel of guests or a panel of expert guests. And this is the show, Kayak Fishing the Wild West, that will plagiarize any kayakfishingradio.com show's intro.
Thanks for that, Rob.
This week, let's share some reports, see what's going on around the fisheries. Let's see what everybody has planned. And I want to talk about a few more serious subjects, threats to the fishery.
Good.
I always get there. I hate to turn it dark so early. But on a lighter note, I do want to remind listeners that although the show is based on the West Coast of the United States, we welcome all of your questions and comments about the sport of kayak fishing, and we want to hear from you. From any fishery anywhere on the planet Earth. Log on to the chat room at kayakfishingradio.com or call into the switchboard and we'll put you on the air live, so to speak. What's going on report-wise? What's that, Isaac?
Hey, let me jump in right here and shout out the phone number if anybody wants to call in. That's 714-816-4727. Can't forget that if they want to call.
We're pretty excited here on the central and northern coast. At 1 minute after midnight, it will be legal to drop your crab pots. I actually got a memo from the Department of Fish and Game this morning that said you're not allowed to put your pots out early. And I think that could be argued because there's a lot of people out there fishing red rock crabs. However, I think if you're putting pots out, and I saw about 100 buoys out there by the harbor about an hour ago, and they're not right up against the rocks, you could probably get cited for fishing early for Dungeness crab. That sense of conscientiousness, I think, is just a good rule to follow the rules. It sets a good example. But people are eager, and I tell you, I went through a whole bag of cookies. I'm all sugared up. My gear is ready. I don't know what boat to take out. I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time to me.
So you're going to be out there tonight then?
You
know, I was thinking of picking Michelle up from the saloon later tonight and heading right over to the coast. I know it's going to be a bustle there. There's a, right there at Bodega Bay at the mouth of Bodega Harbor is a county park. And it's a big one. It's got to be about a mile long. And it runs an artificial jetty out to the harbor mouth. And it is just the most convenient place. In fact, the crab in there is so easy that a lot of times I'll go grab my pots, paddle them back to the beach, close to the beach to sort them, and then paddle them back out just so I get enough exercise. That's how close the fishery is here. But there's going to be hundreds of people, the campers and the motorhomes and the tents and lots and lots and lots of kayaks. I'm sure a lot of that is ncka.org, the NorCal Kayak Anglers. And what a great community, too. That's one thing I really love about crab season and all the openers and all the events is the great sense of community that we have in kayak fishing. It's a little different than the social atmosphere getting onto a party boat with 45 of your closest friends that you've never met
that
before.
That is true.
And I like it. I can feel the buzz going out there. You know, I talk about it a lot when abalone season's in, about 4 in the afternoon. You get into those campgrounds, whether they're private or the state campgrounds, about 4 in the afternoon, you just hear the pounding start, people pounding their abalone, and it's got a real spiritual quality to it. What else are you jumping in with here, Isaac? Have you got a fish report? Have you heard of anything being caught?
Oh, you know,
up there in the great Northwest?
Sturgeon, yes.
Sturgeon report.
Sturgeon's alive and well right now. Just the Columbia River is open right now for sturgeon fishing. And, you know, we're waiting. I know a lot of guys are waiting for the first of the year to come around and open up the Willamette River. At least we hope it's going to be open on in January. We still don't have a official
word
on that.
Great Oregon rivers, the Willamette.
Yeah, that's the big river right through the middle of Portland. I have a buddy that's been fishing there, catch and release only for the last couple of weeks. And yesterday he had, was it yesterday or day before, he had 40 fish to the boat. So
this is sturgeon fishing.
This is sturgeon fishing.
Unbelievable.
Yep. 40 fish in just a few hours out on the Willamette. So, you know, when they get around.
For those who don't know, the Pacific sturgeon fishery has really hit the mark the last couple of seasons. There have been a lot of fish accounted for, landed, released, retained within the slot limit. And California Department of Fish and Game, who is going to get a sound thrashing later in the show, just came out with a memo press release earlier in the week asking anglers to use their best sense of conservation in approaching the sturgeon fishery. This is something I like seeing regulatory agencies do, is educating, trying to get angler attention, raise awareness. And that was really one of the better press releases. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to raise angler awareness so they don't have to add regulations to the fishery. And also make people aware that there are a lot of people out there, and it's really important to know exactly what's going on. You know, it's funny how many times are you out there. I know it happens to me a lot, where I have to pick up the phone to make sure the fish that I want to retain is a keepable fish, and that covers a lot of species.
I've done that more than once, and I've even heard calls over VHF radios and cell phones both. You know, it does.
And I've let a lot of great limits go because I wasn't for sure.
Yep. I've done the same.
Well, the fishing around here has been pretty darn good. You know, in the fall, we're still in the lingcod, cabazon, and rockfish series around here. And the weather's been pretty good. The swell's staying under 10 foot, so you get your opportunities to get out when it's in that 6 and 7 range. The lingcod, you know, this time of year in the fall, the fish really move up into the shallows. They get that spawning thing going on. And there have been a lot of lingcod caught, and the quality of the rockfish, the bright red vermilions and the coppers. The copper is just a wonderful copper rockfish, one of the great species. They're getting big. You're seeing people going out and catching a lot of fish, and averages 5, 6, 7 pound fish, and a lot of the reds getting bigger than that. A lot of lingcod, but the focus right now is on crab, and it's going to turn into the combos. It's going to be crab and rockfish combos as long as the rockfish season holds out. And it's looking like salmon is done here. Salmon closed last weekend, and it was a good salmon season. On that note, here in Sonoma County, we have the Russian River passing through us, heading out to the Pacific, and it is another very good year of counting Chinook salmon, king salmon, coming back into the Russian River. We're well over 2,000 fish counted, which is running second to as high as it's been in about 10 years. So we're seeing good recovery on the salmon. Lots of politics going on in the river over water and breaching the berm on the beach. But as long as the fish are there, I think everything's going positive and forward. I think we're going to have a lot of good years as long as we pay attention to these fisheries.
Yep.
Am I letting you get a word in edgewise, Isaac?
Hey, yeah, I'm all good right here. 2,000
Feel
fish.
Feel free to call into the switchboard.
Yeah. 2,000 fish is a great number. You know, it'll be great to see 4 years down the road how many of those offspring return. Was that 4 or 5 years down the road when they come back, you know?
The studies they're doing, I don't believe could be any better. I mean, they're telling us when these fish were spawned, how long they've been at sea, 2 years. And they're looking, you know, we've got a good 10-year picture on the salmon run, so it's really uphill growth or uphill knowledge from here. It wouldn't be unusual to see even this year, but not very likely, a big rush of salmon come through. But it wouldn't be unusual that next year we could see 4,000-5,000 salmon into the counts, even from 2,000 to 2,500 this year. Really exciting stuff. And again, these are just the fish they're seeing and counting. So
right.
Pretty exciting. That is a no-take fish on the Russian River, and it is a no-take fish everywhere right now that salmon season is closed here. And I'm interested about the silver salmon. Caught a few of those this year. That is a 100% release fish.
Yep, same
you
here.
You see them in the market, though, don't you, caught from different areas?
Actually, I can't say they're always a release fish. We did have a short opening this year for wild coho.
Right.
It was probably 10 days. The hatchery coho was open as normal, and nothing real big to report there except the fact that they did open up wild coho, and I think that ran for about 2 weeks. Just phenomenal. That's great to hear. Great to see. I know some guys that were fishing estuary waters on the fly with bass poppers catching coho this winter or this fall.
They were probably cool. Catching them when a lot of other people weren't using traditional
methods. Exactly.
I love hearing about stuff like that. Over here in the East Bay, the Sacramento Delta system, just east of San Francisco, it's an invasive introduced species, the striped bass, but along with the salmon. And you're in completely urban areas fishing things that, you know, from the landscape look like giant canals packed with salmon, packed with striped bass. And sometimes you're packed with herring, too.
That's what brings them all in to begin with.
I wanted to remind readers, Isaac, listeners, about keepamericafishing.org. This, I think, I have got a heavy sense of fishery politics running through my blood right now. And I hope you'll let me take this lead and talk about a few things that are weighing heavy on me. I look at my desk, and I've tried to touch on the shows a few times, asking listeners, what do you read, if you read anything at all? And what I'm trying to get to is, how do anglers stay informed about their fisheries? And while we have different agencies, different publications, state to state, it all pretty much runs along the same lines. And I look at my desk, and I've got the copy of the Western Outdoor News that had some pretty dark and disturbing information we'll get to. I've got a copy of the latest Sport Fishing magazine. Of all the print magazines, Sport Fishing, I consider it my fishing Bible. Doug Olander, the editor-in-chief, is, if not the one of the most responsible outdoor journalists on the planet. And Doug, it's close to his heart to make sure that he keeps anglers well informed through the magazine, not only teaching us about fishing and all the great opportunities around the world, but keeping us informed, especially at home, about what's going on good about the fisheries and what's going on bad. So Sport Fishing magazine, Western Outdoor News, I get the occasional copy of the Fish Sniffer, which I believe is much bigger in Northern California and the Northwest. You're familiar with that one, Isaac?
I've seen it a time or two, yeah.
Yeah, do you subscribe to any sportsman's magazines?
Just Northwest Sportsman's magazine is the only thing I get in print.
How often does that
come
out?
From there, that's monthly.
And is that a Northwest Sportsman's magazine?
Yep, Northwest Sportsman. It's pretty much just Washington, Oregon. They do some California, a little bit of Idaho, a little bit of Alaska, and a little bit of BC. But that's pretty much all.
I've been getting a great deal of information from the information department of the California Department of Fish and Game. And I really do need to give DFG credit there that while it has taken a few years, they are getting most of the information to anglers. But there was one press release that I missed, and it's a hot topic that I picked up in Western Outdoor News. And the title of this article is, actually there were two dark front page stories in Western Outdoor News. This is the current edition. And for listeners who don't know, Western Outdoor News is the nation's biggest weekly fishing and hunting newspaper. And the editor is Pat McDonald. The other editors are journalists. They're out there, and they care, which is a big difference. And everybody knows Paul Leibowitz. In fact, it was Paul who wrote the Marine Life Protection Act challenge reported on the court setback. The legal challenge that came from United Anglers, Coastside Fishing Club, and Robert Fletcher from Sport Fishing Association of California was shot down. And that is bad news for California anglers, not great news for the fisheries. But the second article on the cover of Western Outdoor News is titled, Animal Rights Group Has Infiltrated the California Department of Fish and Game. And you think about a statement like that, and you think, well, you make sure this isn't an April issue. How could you know, doesn't that seem a little strong? An animal rights group has infiltrated the California Department of Fish and Game. California Department of Fish and Game, like all fish and wildlife state agencies, are there to manage the fisheries and represent anglers and hunters. And what's happened here, if I can quote, in a plot as insidious as anything you've ever seen, the California Department of Fish and Game has gone into partnership with the largest anti-hunting group in the nation, the Humane Society of the United States. Now, Isaac, what do you think about when you think about the Humane Society?
Well, the Humane Society of the United States.
Is it a good hit or a bad hit? Because to me, the Humane Society always meant animal shelters. They always meant dog catchers and people working to get homes to collect animals off the street and get homes, get animals out and adopted. What does it mean to you?
Yeah. If you say just the Humane Society, I think the same thing. I have a long history with animals and animal keeping, and I know that there is a difference between the Humane Society of the United States and your local Humane Society. I understand that difference, and it's usually the local Humane Society is the one that, you know, they're the ones that are
Those are the good guys.
They are the good guys.
And what the Humane Society of the United States is, which is curious that there's a real obvious confusion in the naming of this organization. The DFG has been infiltrated by the world's largest anti-hunting group, the Humane Society of the United States, which is dedicated to outlawing hunting of all types and is even now focusing on outlawing the raising of game birds, using dogs for hunting, and even having farm animals, non-cats and dogs, as household pets.
Yeah.
The HSUS is not your Humane Society. This is a completely different group. They're now helping to fund the Department of Fish and Game, are being trained at the Department of Fish and Game warden training schools, and are even teaching classes to Department of Fish and Game wardens. This is, again, the Humane Society of the United States, the biggest anti-hunting group in the world. It's an abomination, and it began simply enough with a $5,000 donation to the Department of Fish and Game wardens to help with feeding their canine program about 2 years ago. That in itself was enough to raise the ire of California sportsmen and women, and outdoor groups. But that was also enough for the Humane Society to buy their way into the Department of Fish and Game's graces and head law enforcement. And the head law enforcement officer of the Department of Fish and Game has gone way beyond that in her association with the Humane Society of the United States. I'm going to call them the HSUS, their abbreviated name, because this is HSUS. This has nothing to do with the Humane Society. And if you ever questioned that in the political arena, money buys influence, this is one of the most obscene examples I've seen in my lifetime. Imagine the Got Meat commercials hiring a vegan for their spokesman, or the fur industry, the fur coat industry, asking for the endorsement of PETA. That's exactly what's happened with the California Department of Fish and Game accepting the nation's largest anti-hunting organization, the Humane Society of the United States, as a partner. This is really going to start some fires in California fishery politics. I wanted to give listeners a little more information on the Humane Society of the United States. And it's hard to break that mental connection of this is the Humane Society. They must be doing good things for animals, for pets. And my whole reason for bringing this up on kayakfishingradio.com is that anglers, sportsmen, us, we are under attack, and this is a social movement, a strong, powerful, political, social movement that is hand-in-hand associated with extreme environmentalism that has gone mainstream into America. And these are devious organizations that very clearly, and many of them state it, want to remove your right to fish. And it's as simple as that. They don't want you to teach your kids to fish. They think it's bad. The HSUS spends millions of dollars annually to economically cripple meat and dairy producers. Sound familiar? Like other organizations,
yep.
Eliminate the use of animals in biomedical research labs. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of animal testing that's totally unnecessary. There's a lot of groups that have done good things for animals in that regard. On the other hand, as a guy who was in healthcare for a lot of years, has strong feelings about Western medicine, and has a degree in Oriental medicine as an acupuncturist and herbologist, a total ban on this kind of thing is not in anybody's best interest. They are against anyone having pets, even fish in aquariums. They demonize hunters. This is the HSUS. They demonize hunters. And anybody who demonizes hunters, I can guarantee you, anglers are right behind them. They demonize hunters as crazed lunatics and are against any hunting in any form, despite its acceptance by the vast majority of people in the United States who are just fine with it, as long as it's done legally and with a sound scientific and biological base. That sound scientific and biological base is so crucial, but in this argument with extreme environmentalism, to me, it almost seems like a barely a mention. According to the HSUS president, Wayne Pacelle, we will see the end of wild animals in circus acts, and we're phasing out animals used in research. If we could shut down all sport hunting in a moment, we would. Pacelle carefully uses the word sport in all of his diatribes, not recreational hunting, sport, intending to convince people that hunters are only out for sport and that it has nothing to do with enjoyment, to manage and maintain wild animal populations, and for the ultimate goal of putting meat on the table. According to activistcash.com, are we in the world of information, Isaac?
Yeah,
is
we are.
Is it a beautiful thing or what? It's just, I mean, you know, from one end to the other, it's either stuff we want to hear or stuff that probably shouldn't be released, but this is the stuff we want to hear. According to ActivistCash.com, the budget for the Humane Society of the United States in 2008 was $97 million, almost $100 million. Of that budget, $27.5 million was spent on fundraising. Have you seen those horrible, disturbing commercials of sick, mistreated animals in cages that come on to your family viewing on television? Do you know what I'm talking about?
The dog,
if I'm not
cat.
Mistaken, those are HSUS commercials.
They are.
Of that $97 million, $27.5 million was spent on fundraising, $28 million on campaigns, litigation, and investigation, and $38 million more on paying salaries.
Wow.
$38 million out of a $97 million budget on salaries. That left about $5 million in their budget that was spent for travel. Exactly $0 were spent on anything pertaining to the health and welfare of animals. In fact, their budget would be enough to fund every single animal shelter in the United States, and yet they don't own or operate one.
Nope.
I am largely quoting the Western Outdoor News in delivering this information and want to give their reporters full credit. What the Humane Society of the United States has done here is buy the Department of Fish and Game and its support for a few thousand dollars. This is the absolute truth. But there's something that we have to look at as anglers, as voters, as part of the lobby to preserve recreational fishing, sport fishing. And that is the individuals in Fish and Game, in our state agencies, who are charged with protecting our rights and obligated not to do exactly what's happening here. Now, I've got to believe that the law of politics and the law of the United States will prevail, and how many millions of dollars are going to be wasted for us to prevail. And these are millions of dollars that I believe this is all very calculated by these groups. And if the angler lobbies don't take a fresh approach to waging their battle with foresight and many years of planning, that a lot of people in the United States are going to be fishing out of pay ponds in our lifetime. And, you know, when it hits the fan, I think it's going to hit the fan.
You know, those pay ponds wouldn't bode well with HSUS either.
No, they wouldn't. But
no different than a sheep farm, and they've.
But they would have accomplished a lot to get us there. This is probably, you know, I've been ranting and raving about the Marine Life Protection Act in California. I've been talking about closures in Florida, and not only and the Eastern Seaboard, the Gulf Coast. Not only for recreational anglers, but for commercial fishermen too. The fact is, we are feeding the world out of our oceans, and we're going to continue to feed the world despite the best intentions of organizations like this. However, they're going to do a lot of damage. And what I've been ranting and raving about is that feel good sounds great in theory. I can get millions and millions of dollars behind this and make it happen. And in this case, make a job not only for myself, for many, many, many people. Make a career. Mm-hmm. To outlaw recreational fishing. This is much better thought out than any angler lobby I've ever seen. And I think that my rants and raves about MLPA, I mean, it, like they disappeared in a cloud of mist when I saw the HSUS and how they're positioning. Isaac, I don't know what more to say about it except people need to act, and I think the best way to act is to go to keepamericafishing.org and read everything. And you're going to find, whether you're in New England, the Midwest, California, the Northwest, you're going to find issues in your area that they're addressing. They are our biggest, strongest lobbying group. They're working well with smaller regional lobbying groups. And if we spend anything on fishing for ourselves every year, I think as anglers, we're obligated to give these organizations money. I'm really looking at everything that I do in regards to events this year. We never do events without raising money, but I've seen events out there raising money for kayak fishing events around the country, raising money for everything except the fisheries. And I think we really have to make our impact. One of the great things about being in this whole kayak fishing thing, and Isaac, I apologize for hogging the air on you here, greatest things about being a part of kayak fishing is our profile. Our profile, I believe, has been and always will be even bigger than the sport itself, because it appeals to people who will never get in kayaks and fish. It's exciting. It's fun. They like to hear about it. They like to read about it. And we need to keep that profile up there and do something good for the fisheries. And if you listen to this show, if you read anything, you're going to see it more and more that we're hustling you for your charitable dollar. And we're not hustling for us. We're hustling for the fishery. And I think the best direction right now and the best way to get direction is through keepamericafishing.org. I've been watching the lobbyist groups. I'm a big fan of United Anglers. I've grown to like a few other ones. And I really think that keepamericafishing.org is going in the right direction. And I want to get all of my associations right. They're part of a bigger lobbying group. The ASA, American Sport Fishing Association?
Yep.
Yeah.
ASA. They were keepamericafishing.org was pretty much announced at the ICAST 2010, right before the show opened at the industry breakfast. So, yeah, it's ASA, whole bunch of others.
It's creating a wonderful hub.
Yeah.
Well, that is enough of my ranting and raving about politics. I will close the show with a little plea. I wanted to talk about kayak fishing. Isaac, did you have any thoughts for this fine Friday?
I'm just thinking about going.
Fishing or crabbing?
Fishing.
Dude, time to get into the coast and try to work some of those rockfish out of their lairs?
Oh, you know what? I haven't even looked at the surf report.
Are you going back?
I was thinking coastal rivers for Chinook. So,
you lucky dog.
Yeah. Thinking about it, we had some good rain this week. So hopefully, you know, there's still a lot of Chinook hanging out in the estuary areas, and hoping this rain that came through is going to send a bunch of them up the rivers. And
are you
pulling
the lines around for those fish, doing some trolling?
I want to bring my fly rod.
Oh.
I'm going to bring the fly rod. Oh. Trolling spinners works great.
Do you do much casting out of the kayak, or are you moving around and using the kayak for access?
Both.
It must be insane to get hooked up on a big salmon on the fly rod sitting down.
Haven't done it. I'll find out.
It'll happen. I haven't done it on a fly rod, You hear me say it all the time. I'll be on the road to retirement when you see me with a fly rod in my hand. But I remember the first salmon. I love catching salmon. It's like it is literally giant trout fishing. You know,
yeah.
I like the lighter lines but the southern range. Although salmon will go all the way down to like Newport Beach occasionally, the true southern range is like Ventura and Santa Barbara. And we get on them pretty good around here, but it's generally either mooching or pulling the lines around. And I like both. I especially like mooching. And for those who don't know, mooching is simply drifting. I love drift fishing on my kayak, too, and I'm sure that is ingrained from years of nearshore California halibut fishing, throwing out the sea anchor with just enough wind and the current going in the right direction and getting that perfect speed so you could lay a live sardine or anchovy or a live squid in front of the fish. There were days, too, it's funny, when I started getting into fishing as a business, you lose time to fish, you miss hot bites, and it's been a long time, but before it was a business, I had days out where we'd catch 100 pounds or more of halibut a day. And remember, those California halibuts are what you guys call chickens. They're smaller fish. But to get, well, even more than that, I mean, some days you're releasing 5 or 7 30-pound, you know, fish in 30-pound range just because you can't kill that many halibut. You know, you get your one or two, and how much more halibut do you need?
Right. But, a lot of halibut.
And you catch them shallow. They talk about, I've always caught mine deep, and around here we consider halibut fishing deep 90 feet, 100 feet. That's really extremely deep in the California coast, and especially Southern California. But unlike you, we're going to many hundreds of
feet.
People always talk about, and they catch a lot of California halibut in the surf zone. But a lot of people, I never fish deeper than 18 feet. I see a lot of that in the Santa Monica Bay. Topanga Eric, a great halibut fisherman, he's had years where he's caught over 200 legal halibut in the Santa Monica Bay, never fishing deeper. Every time he hits 18, 19 feet, he goes in and repeats his drift to shallow up. And that's how I've learned how to catch every fish I've ever caught, is by watching other people catch fish.
That works.
It does work for me, I tell you. Do you use a sea anchor much?
Only when it's windy. That's about it.
Well, that's really what it's for. A lot of people get confused.
Yeah.
I think the sea anchor is one of your is probably, you know, after the paddle, the most important. That's how much I use it. And I use it in all kinds of fisheries, freshwater and salt. In fact, the only areas you really don't use sea anchors is in the rivers.
And I do, actually.
You use them in the rivers? In what about, how do you do that?
Just with our Willamette River that I was talking about earlier for sturgeon fishing, if the Columbia River is up high, it backs up the Willamette and there's no current. So I'll drop my standard anchor and then also throw out my sea anchor just to keep tension on the anchor.
Huh.
Because it's real easy. You can look down and you're blowing up river. And your anchor's sitting in front of you instead of behind you, you know.
Now, do you keep sonar on your boat, a fish finder?
Yes, I do.
And when you fish for sturgeon, do you paddle your areas, look for the ledges?
I've done a lot of that already.
Or you pretty much fish, so you know your spots when you go to them.
Yeah, I know exactly, you know, pull
can
up on the river,
bait?
That's my
sonar. Can you read bait on the sonar in the river? Or is it too murky?
Yeah, what am I using for sonar? My sonar just won't pick it up.
Right.
It won't pick up the bait on the bottom. And sturgeon, I don't know if a fish finder that's even going to show sturgeon on the bottom.
Yeah, I don't think, I don't know about that, you know. I mean,
so, There might be.
I've been looking at the price of sonar lately, and I'm guessing that that unit is out there, but you'll never see it on a kayak.
Probably not.
You know, I've been surprised, too. I've been looking at a lot of prices lately. When I started kayak fishing, I'm guessing it was, well, when I started paying attention to kayak fishing, which was when I started writing in 94, 95, to buy a Scupper Classic or an Aquaterra Prism, you would be hard-pressed to spend, to get real fully outfitted, spend $700. And
Wow. Now
the price to enter the sport is more than double that. And you've got dozens of boats to choose from. It's just, it blows my mind. But, again, compared to, you know, I've seen it for my entire career, guys walking up and saying, yeah, I just bought a kayak and saved $37,000 because I came to a show, you know, thinking I was going to buy another powerboat. And that's how a lot of kayak fishermen get started. I'm sure you see it a lot up there, too.
Absolutely.
So, you ever make it? Now, you go over to the coast at all? I know the coast is long way from Portland.
Oh, it's an hour and a half is all.
Oh, not so bad. So you get a few link ups through the course of the year?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've done some winter fishing, and they get shallow. I've caught link cod here in 15 feet of water, which is just unheard of.
We see them shallow here, too. I'm sure they're a lot bigger up by you. You know, that's one thing I think people don't really realize. You get some gorgeous conditions during the winter, too.
Yeah, here you really have to keep your eye on the reports and on the cameras. I was just looking to see maybe I might hit some salt water this weekend.
The surf cams,
yeah,
you mean?
No. Yeah. 11.5 to 13.5 feet. So I'll be staying in fresh water this weekend.
I will be up at 5 a.m., so, hooking up with English Nick and throwing some turkey necks in the traps and getting them in the water. We're toasting the season with champagne and bubble up. Pick your poison. I'm very excited. And hopefully we'll be doing some crab omelets on the beach come 9 or 10 o'clock.
Ooh,
I could get them out there tonight over midnight. I'm not sure it's going to happen. But we'll see what my energy levels are. It's been a long week, and I got a lot of suits to repair tonight. Well, actually, a couple of them anyway.
Yeah.
You wearing dry suits, dry gear, or wet suits, or a combination of everything?
Dry gear all the time.
Have you had to do any repairs?
Not yet, no. We were talking before the show. I also have the Kokatat Tempest pants that I wear with a dry top.
Yeah, we've all got those.
You know, after two seasons, they hold up pretty well for me. I haven't had any repairs to do. I also have a pair of Frog Tog waders that I bought on sale brand new for $60 or $70, and they've done me very well.
Is that a neoprene wader?
It's a breathable fabric.
Oh, dry wader.
Yeah. So,
a lot of arguments about that, and we'll take it to another show. Isaac, I think I'm going to sign us out for tonight.
All right. Sounds like
another fine Friday, the 4th of November, Kayak Fishing the Wild West. We'll be back next week at 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time with lots of reports, recipes, information on the fisheries, an expert panel of guests. I want to thank Isaac the Nothing Miller and hope you get on the water and get on them this weekend.
Sounds awesome. Have a great weekend, guys.
And you, Isaac. Be well, everyone. Bye now.